last week, NASA announced its latest findings from the Kepler mission. Kepler's a space telescope that was launched in 2009 to look for habitable planets. Current State's Emmanuel Berry sat down with an astronomer to learn more about Kepler's findings. Emmanuel, do we have any new neighbors we just found out about?
Well, yes and no. Kepler has identified 715 new planets within our galaxy. But as for neighboring planets, these are really, 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 really far away.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. and as you can tell from my units of measurement, I'm not a scientist. Really, really, really is not a measurement, unfortunately. So I spoke with Megan Donahue, an MSU professor in physics and astronomy, and she helped me break down Kepler's latest findings.
Kepler is a relatively small telescope. It's only about 1.5 meters in diameter. For comparison, the Hubble Space Telescope is 2.4 meters in diameter, and the biggest telescopes that we have on the ground are 10 meters in diameter. So it's not a big telescope, and it was designed to look at one small patch of sky and just stare at this piece of sky and measure the brightnesses of these 100,000 stars or so, and just keep measuring them over and over and wait for those stars to vary. And in particular, they're looking for eclipses of those stars to search for planets.
So are we also looking at orbit to try and determine if they're similar to Earth or not, or how does that work?
Right. So one thing to remember is that the period of a planet's orbit around its star is related to the size of the orbit, with the longer periods corresponding to the larger orbits. And so we can figure out how far the planet is from its host star by measuring the period of the orbit. So if the period repeats every 4 days, if the eclipse happens every 4 days, we know the period is very short and that planet is really close in to its host star. Whereas if the period were 1 year, we know the planet is perhaps the distance of the Earth from the sun, because that's the Earth's period around the sun. That relationship is affected by the mass of the star. So we also need to know what kind of star it's orbiting, but that's usually a pretty easy thing to do. Most of these stars are less massive than the sun. And we can use the relationship between star mass, the period of the orbit, and the size of the orbit to figure out how far these planets are from the host star. And so we're looking for planets in the habitability zone, which is another aspect of being sort of Earth-like. And those are planets that are not too far from the sun and not too close to the sun to have possibility of liquid water on their surfaces. And this is sort of called the Goldilocks zone for planets. And
just right.
Just right.
Yeah.
And so these planets around our own, in our own solar system, would be, you know, somewhere between 1/2 of an astronomical unit, which is the average distance of the Earth to the sun. So between 1/2 and 2 astronomical units. So planets in that range from our own sun would be considered in the Goldilocks zone or the habitable zone.
Last week, NASA announced the discovery of over 715 new planets through Kepler. What are these planets like? I mean, do we have a sense of size or how many of them fit into this Earth-like habitable zone?
Well, a small fraction of them are in this habitable zone, because the habitable zone has only been possible to probe that as the mission has aged. So The earliest part of the mission, we were able to catch all those planets with very short periods, because if it has a 4-day period, it's
You're
going to repeat 10 times a month. So astronomers will be convinced that those are actual real planets much earlier than it is for a planet that only repeats like once a year. So this last batch of planets gives us our highest boost in our knowledge of planets in the habitable zone ever. It's our highest boost in the number of planets ever, right? Because it almost doubled the number of planets that we even knew about. And the surprising thing about these planets And the surprising thing that Kepler has revealed to us about planets is that there are a lot of planets that are not like the planets in our own solar system. So,
how are they different? Yeah.
Well, the important thing that these planets are probably rocky, watery planets that aren't quite as dense as the Earth, but much more dense than a gas giant. And they're about 2 to 4 times the diameter of the Earth.
So big, rocky, watery
big
planets.
Big, rocky, watery planets. And we don't have any counterparts in our own solar system. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when we're trying to figure out how planets form, it's good to have a lot of examples of planets. And really, our own solar system gives us some examples of rocky, relatively dry planets. Even our Earth has, although it has water on it, it's a lot of water compared to how much rock there is.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have these gas giants that are farther away and presumably formed in the outer solar system because they could acquire ices as well as rock, and then they could hold on to their hydrogen compound atmospheres. And so those planets are largely gas. And so they're not as dense as the what we call the rocky planets or terrestrial planets. And then we have nothing really in between. And so this last batch of planets from Kepler, there's a lot of these sort of super Earth-sized planets. There's also a number of gas giants that are smaller than Neptune. So we're filling in the gaps.
Gas giants.
Small gas giants, large terrestrial planets. And, of course, the very first planets that we discovered outside our own solar system were these things called hot Jupiters, which, of course, we don't have in our own solar system either.
Yeah.
And those are presumably gas giants that formed well outside in the solar system and then somehow migrated in early in this the solar system's formation as it was still interacting with the disk and so forth. And then it comes in closer. It gets heated up but not destroyed. And those planets are also unexpected and were really a puzzle when they were first discovered.
So these planets, how far away are we talking?
Unfortunately or fortunately, all these planets are very far away. Kepler looked at a part of the sky that was towards the galactic center, so the number of stars in its field of view was huge. And that was the part of the idea, that it wanted to look in the direction of space that had a lot of stars and not a whole lot of really, really bright stars. Because those really, really bright stars, you can imagine, saturate your image and cause mm-hmm. all kinds of problems. So you want to look at a place where you're not looking at, you know, Sirius or Alpha Centauri, but somewhere in a more average part of the universe, I mean, of the galaxy, but at in a high density direction, so you get a lot for your pointing,
yeah.
your one picture. They wanted to maximize the number of stars for which they could measure individual light curves, and so many of these stars are many thousands of light years away.
Unfortunately, Kepler had an accident of sorts, or is no longer in commission. But although there's information still being processed, but what exactly happened?
Every spacecraft has a certain number of parts that, you know, allow it to change its pointing or keep it on track or adjust its angular momentum and things like that. And that can limit its lifetime. So once these things break, then that's the end of the life of the telescope. This mission was designed for 5 years. It lasted a little over 6 or 7. And the engineers would say,
Success. Yeah.
We win because we designed it to last 5, and it lasted pretty much exactly that long. And then one of these random events that are inevitably going to happen, just as when you buy a car and you keep it running forever and ever, it's eventually going to break. You don't know exactly what's going to break, but something will break. And for Kepler, it was these reaction wheels.
Although it's out of commission, I guess, what legacy does it leave behind, or what are the greatest takeaways from the mission for you as someone who works in astronomy and physics?
It's an example of a very simple, focused mission that did a lot of science, and it was primarily aimed at discovering planets. When Kepler was launched, people had no idea how common planets were, and in particular, they had no idea how common Earth-like or rocky planets were. We knew that there were these hot Jupiters, but we didn't know whether they were around 1% of stars or 10% of stars, or and whether hot Jupiters were the rule or the exception. And it turns out that the fraction of stars with planets is nearly every star. And many planets have multiple stars. We had no idea about those numbers 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of debate about those numbers, even as recently as 3 years ago. And Kepler definitively answered in the positive, planets are common. Multiple planetary systems are common. There are examples of planets that are completely unlike the ones we see in our solar system. You know, there are, we know that there are 10 to the 22 stars in our observable universe. That's one with 22 zeros. And if nearly all of them have planets, that's an awful lot of planets.
Yeah, it is. Megan Donahue is a professor of physics and astronomy at Michigan State University. Megan, thanks for your time.
Thank you.